जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय गोपी जनवल्लभा गिरिवरधारी, जय गोपी जनवल्लभा गिरिवरधारी, यशोदानन्दन भ्रज जनरञ्जन, यशोदानन्दन भ्रज जनरञ्जन, यमुना तीरावनचारी, यमुना तीरावनचारी, जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, हरे कृष्णा। सो वेलकम टू टुडेज मॉर्निंग श्रीमद् भागवतम क्लास। जय श्री राधा वृंदावन भरी भगवान की, जय श्री गौरांग महाप्रभु की जय। वेलकम टू एवरीवन। सो वी आर डिस्कसिंग कैंटो 5 and we are in the middle of a very interesting discussion on Vedic cosmology, Prabhuji's favorite subject. And so today we are discussing chapter 22, the orbits of the planets, and we'll be discussing the first seven verses, the seventh verse as a purport. So verse number 1 is on the board, so I'll very quickly read the verse and we can repeat the translation together. यत् एतद् भगवता आदित्यस्य मेरुं ध्रुवं च प्रदक्षिणेन परिक्रामन्तो राशीनाम् अभिमुखं प्रचलितं च प्रदर्शिनानां भगवत् उपवर्णितम् अमुष्य वयं कथम् अनुमिमीहिता। सो द ट्रान्स्लेशन् प्लीज रिपीट्। किङ्ग् परीक्षित् इन्क्वायर्ड् फ्रम् सुखदेव गोस्वामी, My dear Lord, you have already affirmed the truth that the supremely powerful sun god travels around Dhruvaloka with both Dhruvaloka and Mount Sumeru on his right. Yet, at the same time, the sun god faces the signs of the zodiac and keeps Sumeru and Dhruvaloka on his left. How can we reasonably accept that the sun god proceeds with Sumeru and Dhruvaloka on both his left and right simultaneously? like that. Let's read a few more translations. Text number 2. Shri Sukhdeva Goswami clearly answered, when a potter's wheel is moving and small ants located on that big wheel are moving with it, one can see that their motion is different from that of the wheel because they appear sometimes on one part of the wheel and sometimes on another. Similarly, the signs and constellations with Sumeru and Dhruvaloka on their right move with the wheel of time, and the ant-like sun and other planets move with them. The sun and planets, however, are seen in different signs and constellations at different times. This indicates that their motion is different from that of the zodiac and the wheel of time itself. Understood? Jai. Then we don't need class. Text 3. The original cause of the cosmic manifestation is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana. When great saintly persons, fully aware of the Vedic knowledge, offered prayers to the Supreme Person, he descended to this material world in the form of the sun to benefit all the planets and purify fruitive activities. He divided himself into 12 parts and created seasonal forms beginning with spring. In this way, he created the seasonal qualities such as heat, cold, and so on. Text number 4. According to the system of 4 varnas and 4 ashramas, people generally worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead Narayana, who is situated as a sun god. With great faith, they worship the Supreme Personality as a super soul, according to ritualistic ceremonies handed down in the 3 Vedas, such as Agnihotra and similar higher and lower fruitive acts, and according to the process of mystic yoga. In this way, they very easily attain the ultimate goal of life. Text number 5. The sun god, who is Narayana or Vishnu, the soul of all the worlds, is situated in outer space between the upper and lower portions of the universe. Passing through 12 months of the wheel of time, the sun comes in touch with 12 different signs of the zodiac and assumes 12 different names according to those signs. The aggregate of those 12 months is called a samvatsara, or an entire year. According to lunar calculations, 2 fortnights, one of the waxing moon and other of the waning, form 1 month. That same period is 1 day and night for the planet Pitraloka. According to stellar calculations, a month equals 2 1/4 constellations. When the sun travels for 2 months, a season passes, and therefore the seasonal changes are considered parts of the body of the year. Text number 6. Thus, the time the sun takes to rotate through half of outer space is called an ayana, or its period of movement in the north or in the south. Text number 7. This verse has a purport. The sun god has 3 speeds, slow, fast, and moderate. The time he takes to travel entirely around the spheres of heaven, earth, and space at these 3 speeds is referred to by learned scholars by the 5 names Samvatsara, Parivatsara, Idavatsara, Anuvatsara, and Vatsara. Purport. According to solar astronomical calculations, each year extends 6 days beyond the calendar year. And according to lunar calculations, each day is 6 days shorter. Therefore, because of the movements of the sun and moon, there is a difference of 12 days between solar and lunar years. As the Samvatsara, Parivatsara, Idavatsara, Anuvatsara, and Vatsara pass by, 2 extra months are added within each 5 years. This makes a 6th Samvatsara, but because that Samvatsara is extra, the solar system is calculated according to the above 5 names. Om Ajnanatimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Namaom Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine. Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshattarine. Vanchakalpatarurbhyascha kripasindubhya evacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. ಜಯ ಶ್ರೀ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಪ್ರಭು ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಶ್ರೀ ಅದ್ವೈತ ಗದಾಧರ ಶ್ರೀವಾಸ್ ಆದಿ ಗೌರ ಭಕ್ತ ವೃಂದ ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೇ 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 ರಾಮ ಹರೇ ರಾಮ 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 ಹರೇ 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 ಕೃಷ್ಣ. ಸೊ ದಿಸ್ ಇಸ್ ಒನ್ ಆಫ್ ದ ಮೋಸ್ಟ್ ಡ್ರೆಡೆಡ್ ಸೆಕ್ಷನ್ಸ್ ಫಾರ್ ಬೋತ್ ಸ್ಪೀಕರ್ಸ್ ಆಫ್ ಭಾಗವತಂ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ದ ಆಡಿಯನ್ಸ್ ಆಫ್ ಭಾಗವತಂ. ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಸಮ್ ಹೌ ಐ ಟ್ರೈಡ್ ಮೈ ಬೆಸ್ಟ್ ಸಮ್ ಹೌ ಎಸ್ಕೇಪ್ ರಾಧಾ ಮದನ್ ಗೋಪಾಲ್ ಪ್ರಭು, ಬಟ್ ಸಮ್ ಹೌ ಹಿ ಕಾಟ್ ಮೀ ಸೇಯಿಂಗ್ ದಟ್ ದಿಸ್ ಮಂತ್ ದೇರ್ ಇಸ್ ನೋ YTTC, ಸೊ ಯು ಶುಡ್ ಕಮ್ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಗಿವ್ ಕ್ಲಾಸ್. ಸೊ ಹಿಯರ್ ಐ ಆಮ್. ಸೊ ದಿಸ್ ಇಸ್ ಅ ವೆರಿ ಇಂಟ್ರೆಸ್ಟಿಂಗ್ ಚಾಪ್ಟರ್. ಸೊ ವಿ ವಿಲ್ So, what are the orbits and the planets and the movements of sun are going to be discussed. So, that also we will discuss today. But along with what exactly are these orbits, we'll answer two more things. How exactly do these orbits form? And more importantly, why all this is relevant to us? Right? So, these three aspects we'll try to take up the discussion today. So, first of all, we should understand that Krishna is adhokshaja, means somebody who is beyond our senses. Prabhupada elsewhere he writes that adhokshaja means any combination of letters from A to Ksha, basically which means entire letters, you know, it sounds in Devanagari A and Ksha the last letter. So any combination of letters, that is any words you can combine from A to Ksha, he is beyond all that, which means he is indescribable. So the nature of absolute truth is he is indescribable. And part of the absolute truth, so what comprises of the absolute truth? Everything. Which means even this material world is beyond description. Right? But for us to clearly function in this world, we need to make sense of things. Therefore, we have different models to understand this abstract reality. That's how the human mind works. We need structures, we need models to understand. Right? Now, even within the Vedic fold, there are many models of explaining reality. Somebody will explain this world, the physical world. For example, if you go to a Vedantist, they will describe the world as a combination of gunas. Right? When they look at someone, when they look at Tarunitai Prabhu, they will say, oh, lot of sattva. That's why he is able to maintain his school all these years with two very difficult departments under him. So, they will look at him from that model. Somebody else may, for example, if you go to an Ayurvedic doctor, they will look at same Tarunitai Prabhu, say, nice balance of kapha, vata, pitta. Good. Right? Same person, they are looking at him from that model. But if you go to an astrologer, they will say, oh, all his houses are in the right planets and the right houses, that's why he's so balanced. Right? If you go to a yogi, they will say, all his chakras are in balance. So you see, they are all trying to make sense of... Now, Tarunitai Prabhu, can you put him on paper? Can you describe the entirety of Tarunitai Prabhu on paper? No. It's a very abstract thing. However, to make sense of the abstract, sometimes we need models. So these are the different models that you will see across Vedic, modern, in any world, any part of the science, you will see there are always these models. One important thing we need to note is, don't get stuck with any model. Because our goal is to understand Tarunitai Prabhu, the person. So there will always be some abstractness to him. So these models are more like frameworks for us to deal as sane as possible. But you cannot entirely capture Tarunitai Prabhu in one box. Right? 10% kapha, 20% vata, you know, 60% pitta. You can never capture him that way. So with this understanding, let's try to analyze what is the model of creation that Bhagavatam is trying to present and why it is so brilliant, right? So, again, the universe cannot be described. Let's be clear about that, right? Whether it be modern or ancient, nothing can fully capture. The moment you say, I have completely explained the universe, you are saying, I have captured Krishna through my intelligence. But Krishna is Ajita. He can never be conquered, neither by our intelligence or through our words, right? So, what is a challenge in dealing with the Vedic cosmology, right? So, we need some stationary frame of reference, right? I always need something to, some firm ground I need. Like for example, if I ask, for example, where is Delhi? It is right next to the, you know, go on the highway where you see the buffalo, that's where Delhi is. But buffalo is a moving frame of reference, so I cannot describe. Maybe if you give in reference to a mountain there, from that mountain take a right turn, then it makes more sense. The directions make more sense, right? You cannot give addresses with respect to moving objects. Now tell me, what is not moving in this universe? How many of you say Dhruva doesn't move? Raise your hand. Okay. How many of you say sun does not move? Raise your hand. No one. How many of you say earth does not move? Raise your hand. Now test of your fidelity to Vedic philosophy. Earth does not move. Guess what? There is nothing that is stationary. Dhruva Tara also moves. 2600 years ago, the pole star was Ajita. There is a very tiny shift. Okay, why the pole star doesn't move from our perception? Okay, the reason is, imagine everything is moving, right? Imagine all my fingers are moving. Okay, but each finger is a different star, planet, whatever, right? Now imagine if the axis of my thumb, I mean this vertical line along my thumb, and the axis of my tip of the forefinger, they both are always aligned. So while everything else is moving, you see, with respect to the thumb and the forefinger, they always remain together. Because of this axis alignment, it seems like even though the whole sky is moving, all the luminaries in the sky are moving, all the nakshatras, grahas are all moving, from our perspective, it seems like the North Pole is stationary because of the axis alignment. However, across long time, like around 2600 years they say, is when the Earth's axis, because Earth is a slightly wobbling. It is rotating and revolving, right? And it is also wobbling. Because the slight wobble, some 6 degrees or something they say is a wobble, because that slight wobble, the axis keeps changing, which means it moves. So imagine if I have 2 fingers now, okay? This way, you can see this way. Sometimes it is, okay, this finger. Sometimes it is like this, sometimes it is like this. So, Ajita, who is Lord Vishnu himself, was the pole star once upon a time. So in Bhagavatam says that Lord Vishnu gave the pole star status to Dhruva. So the earth axis moved, and therefore now Polaris or Dhruva Tara is our new pole star. Anyway, so point is pole star also moves. So everything is moving. Do you know even the sun is moving? We think that the sun is not moving, but actually if you imagine, this is how we were always taught. The sun is in the middle. All the planets are rotating around it in different, their own orbits, right? And this is how we visualize the outer space, right? But this is not how the outer space is. The outer space is like this. The sun is also moving. And along with the sun, everything is also moving. So, you can't put any one frame of reference, right? So what can we do? So the best model, therefore, is the Bhagavatam's model, where it talks in terms of stationary planes. If you notice in all the examples I gave you, this plane always remained the same. What you call a solar system or plane, right? So that plane, the mandala model, is actually the most effective model. So there's a nice app by Google called a Sky Map. So in the sky map, if you search, where is the sun? Okay, there is the sun, okay? So if you look at the sun, so I don't know if you guys, maybe you guys can see. Keshavan Prabhu can see. So if you look at the sun here, we have to point the camera towards this direction of your thing, then it will come. So here the sun, in the straight line, Mars, Mercury on top, bottom, Pluto, Saturn, Jupiter. So they are always in this line. They are all in one same plane because our entire mandala remains the same, and that's how the whole mandal is moving. So this kind of a planar model of analysis is easy to fit into a system, right? Now in that plane, our finally at the end of the day, what matters is how these things are influencing us on planet Earth, not how the entities on sun are being influenced. So the Vedic model takes the Earth as the stationary frame of reference, and in relation to Earth they describe the entire creation. If this part is clear, then rest of the chapter is very easy. Rest of the whole, this whole 5 chapters of Vedic cosmology is very, very easy. It's just setting the frame of reference, right? So now, another aspect that we need to understand is, why are we creating these models? To understand, to help us in our day-to-day life, and to see how those things are influencing us, right? Like for example, if I were to map every single person in this room, right? So let's say I will describe again Tharun Nithai Prabhu as so-and-so height, so-and-so weight, right? Say 5 foot 8, 60 kilos, right? I'll describe Bhadra Nithai Prabhu 5 feet 6, 55 kilos, etc. Now, what use is the data? I'm going to lift them every day? Are they my dumbbells or some weight? Am I going to do weightlifting with them? So even though that is a very accurate, absolute description of Tharun Nithai Prabhu and Bhadra Nithai Prabhu, but it is absolutely irrelevant for me. But if I were to describe Tharun Nithai Prabhu as peaceful temperament, Bhadra Prabhu, almost peaceful temperament, right? Or somebody else, you know, Anandimai Prabhu, peaceful before the meeting and not so peaceful after the meeting, after the construction department meeting. So, you see, now in my head, I am mapping Tharun Nithai Prabhu as peaceful sky blue color and Bhadra Nithai Prabhu as little orange color. It is not full red, orange is not so angry, but you know, and then Prabhu's color keeps shifting between blue and red, only two zones. So, you see, but is Prabhu blue or red? Or is Tharun Nithai Prabhu blue or Bhadra red? No. None of these, you know, if you look at it from an absolute point of view, none of these are may seem like an accurate description. But from my experience, this is the most accurate description. In fact, I may push it one level ahead that what you call as absolute measurement as height, weight, etc. are not relevant. They are not accurate. The most accurate description of a person is their temperament. Right? When I say describe yourself, will you say your height and weight or will you say your nature? So, this understanding of an experiential model of reality is the foundation of the entire Vedic philosophy. This is where we differ extremely from the way modern science has been presenting reality. Modern science is too much into, you know, the very external details, right? External details of color, dimensions, etc., etc. And they remove the consciousness out of the whole interaction, right? Now, for me, this red color is nice, royal color. But for somebody who is triggered by red color, this is not a royal color, this is a dangerous color. Right? So at the end of the day, we need to understand things based on an experiential model and not just based on some physical irrelevant dimensions. Right? And this is where the Bhagavatam's model of not just the Vedic cosmology, everything, whether it be the Guda analysis or the Prakriti analysis, or Swabhava, everything, the very approach of the Vedic thought process is, how does something outside of me influence me? I am not interested in, you know, in the previous, one of the previous classes we discussed Sankhya philosophy, even there we spoke about this. I am not interested in whether it is gold or iron or copper or tungsten. Any solid, if I hit my head, I am going to experience pain. So all solids are one tattva, bhutattva. Right? Any kind of liquid, if I throw it, I am going to get wet. So I am interested more in terms of not the the quote-unquote physical properties of something, but how they matter to me, right? So based on that, if you understand, with these two criteria, if you understand the Bhagavatam's model, it is, you will see it is so relevant and so brilliant, right? And that is what Parikshit Maharaj is being taught. And of course, why is he being taught, we'll discuss in the end of the class, because that is ultimately what really matters to all of us. So in this, this chapter begins with an interesting question that Parikshit Maharaj asks about, you know, how can simultaneously Dhruvatara and Sumeru be on the, if you remember the previous chapter, we saw how there is a Sumeru mountain and the Dhruvatara is, and there is the axis of, remember the bull and how it is yoked. And the sun chariot on his single wheel, he's moving around, keeping the Dhruvatara to his right. But then later, I think in text number 8 of the previous chapter, so there it says, in the previous chapter, text number 8 and 9, it says, the living entities residing on Sumeru mountain are always very warm as at midday, because for them sun is always overhead. Although the sun moves counterclockwise, facing the constellations, with Sumeru mountain to its left, it also moves clockwise and appears to have the mountain on its right. So the sun is simultaneously moving both clockwise and anticlockwise. So how is that possible? So that's the question which Parikshit Maharaj asks. Because, you know, like Bhadra can be to your left or to your right, not simultaneously two places, unless he knows how to expand like a yogi. So is something like that happening? So how is that possible? So for that he is explaining the whole science of relative motion. So he gives a very simple day-to-day observed example of a potter's wheel. Right? So to understand this, let's first, because we can't think circular, let's talk of linear. Okay? So here is a nice problem in kinematics for all of you. Okay? Be ready to go back to your high school physics. So imagine two cars. Car A is moving at a speed of 10 kilometers per hour. Car B is moving at a speed of 9 kilometers per hour. Both start at same point. So after 1 hour, what is the distance between both of them? Car A is moving at 10 kilometers per hour. So after 1 hour, how many kilometers it traveled? 10 kilometers it traveled after 1 hour. Car B, 9 kilometers per hour. So after 1 hour, how many kilometers it traveled? 9 kilometers. So what is the difference between both of them? 1 kilometer. Okay. Are you all still with me? Okay. Now, let us make this straight road into a circular track. Like those racing tracks. One circular track. Now, be ready. After, what is the length of the track, by the way? 10 kilometers. Okay. So, after 10 rounds, what is the distance between, because car B is slow, na? So it has to be behind car A always, obviously, right? Faster car goes ahead, slower car is behind. So after 10 laps, what is the difference in their position? So in a circle, if this is the starting point, if I travel 10 kilometers, where will I come back? Same point. Look at the clock. Right? So after 1 hour, again it comes back to the same point. So now there is, so this, if you understood this much, you can understand the analogy of the potter's wheel. Right? Now, when this from a car A perspective, if you are sitting in car A, you will notice, why is this fellow going back in reverse? Right? Because if your car is speeding, right, it seems like I made 10 laps, this fellow went 1 lap back, because that's what 10 minus 1, 9. It seems like for an observer in car A, car B went back by 1 lap, reverse. But is the car B going back at any point? It is going in forward direction, it is moving in clockwise direction only. But for an observer in car A, it seems like car B is going counterclockwise. This difference in relative motion is what is being captured in this analogy here. Why is this important? This is how the sun, the moon, everything is moving around. So, remember I told you how the sun is also moving earlier? That entire movement of the universe is the time factor, the Kala Chakra. So imagine this Kala Chakra is moving and you on earth are seeing, aray, pura sky is moving on the axis of Dhruvatara. Everything is moving, right? That is your absolute frame of reference of time, right? But amidst this, there is a sun who is going slightly slower than that Kala Chakra. So with reference to the center of existence, the sun is moving around Sumeru. Existence means here our Sumeru is the axis of the entire universe, right? So with respect to Sumeru, yes, sun is moving clockwise, with keeping to right side means clockwise like this, okay? But then from Earth, it seems like the sun is, because of its slow speed of the sun, like car B, it is going back. It seems like it is going back. From our perception, this difference is what is being highlighted here. Now, when it comes to moon, things get even more. The next section next is all about description of the moon. Moon is even more. The difference in speed is even more. Therefore, so this that is how, because of this difference in the motions, we get all these calculations in astrology, right? So we'll try to understand that also today. So did we cover everything in this? Yeah, in first, second verse we covered. So let's see third verse. The third verse is what is very important. We'll come back to that at the end of this discussion. But the second half of third verse is important. It says, it is this Supreme Lord Narayan as Surya, Surya Bhagavan, Surya Narayana. He divides himself into 12 parts and creates seasonal forms beginning with spring. In this way, he created the seasons and so on. So, this one full rotation of the sun from our perspective, right? Because sun is also moving from our perspective. So, this creates the concept of the year. And within this year, the sun is also creating different seasons. Like for example, how many seasons do we have in India? Six. Shadrutus. So, if in 1 year, there are 6 Rutus, then each Rutu is how much time? 2 months. So that is what is being described here. That how, with 2 months gap, there are these different seasons. And then because of that, there is so much life happening on earth. Think about it. If there is only one season, like for example, you go to the poles, right? It's either continuously dark or continuously bright. So even the concept of day and night is also lost there. No day and night, no seasons. That is why those are uninhabitable places. They are called Radhadeshas, where no inhabitation ever takes place. Right? But we are so fortunate, especially those of us who are living close to the equator, right, between the Tropic of Cancer and Tropic of Capricorn. We are so fortunate, we get to experience lot of seasons. The richness of life is there in these regions. Right? So this richness of life, the prana, the richness is coming from where? Surya Narayan. Right? So every day when you wake up, you should thank Surya Narayan for that. Right? Otherwise, no mangoes only. No strawberries. No grapes. No santra. No seasons. Right? Then how is this done? How do we acknowledge this gratitude to Surya Narayan? the Vedic system, according to our Varna and Ashrama Dharma, there are different, you know, rituals that one needs to follow. If you are following the more of the Agnihotra, the traditional karma-centric activities. However, that same sun is also seen as a source. So here we are looking at sun as source of my daily existence. That is the karma way of looking at the world. But you can also look at the same sun as a source of all our energy. The prana of this whole universe is coming from sun. In fact, sun is the only source of energy on this planet. Do you know? Next time when somebody asks you how many types of power are there, there's only one answer, solar energy. Right? Then Prabhu will say, but Prabhu, in our high school, Pavan Prabhu is saying, in our high school you were taught there is thermal energy, hydel energy, tidal energy. Right? So all of that, where is that coming from? Where is your coal coming from? Coal is fossilized plants, trees and animals. But how did the tree grow to become so big? Because it took sunlight. So what you are accessing today as petroleum or coal is sunlight that has been captured 1 million years ago. Nothing more. It's just delayed sunlight. Right? When you're talking about wind energy, what is causing the wind to move? The difference in pressure. What causes pressure difference? Difference in temperature. What is causing the temperature? Sunlight. Again, wind energy is also solar power. Transformation of solar power. What else do we know? Hydel energy. How is the water flowing? Because of rains. What is causing rains? Evaporation. What is causing evaporation? Again, sun. So, hydel energy is also transformation of solar energy. What else? Tidal energy. Sun and moon also will include here. So, everything. Sun is the only source of prana on this planet. So, yogi looks at sun not just as some abstract luminary in the sky, but looks at it as a source of prana. So they are looking at the energy transfer. Like for example, none of the accounts people are here, but right, say if our Hari Madhav Prabhu or Nandanan Prabhu, right, or Sheshtapati Prabhu, when they, oh, Mataji is here, yes, right. And Hemangi Mataji, when she looks at different people from different departments, she only remembers the cash, the transactions happening in the department, right? What is the budget you allocated, how much you spent, how much in deficit, how much in surplus. She looks at all of you as just numbers, right? So a yogi is like that. A yogi looks at everything in this world in terms of energy transfers. And therefore, for them, they use the method of mystic yoga to understand the energies within our body, within the creation, within the different aspects of this creation, and they try to look at it from that energy audit. That is their way of interacting with the Vriya. Again, you see, it's their model, that's all. So that is what is explained in text number 4. Then, text number 5 says, this is interesting. This is where now we have to go into Jyotish Shastra. So the sun, who is Narayan, who is a soul of the whole world, is situated in the outer space, in the antariksha, between the upper and lower portions of the universe. So in the previous chapter, we discussed how the entire universe is like a wheat seed, which has the upper and the lower husk, right? So imagine a seed. So the very thin middle part is where we all are there. The upper part is all upper planetary system, lower part is all the Garbhodak Sagar, right? So in this middle, so this antariksha is a small region between your Dhruvatara and the earthly planetary system. And that is where our Surya Bhagavan is moving. And passing through 12 months of the wheel of time, the sun comes in touch with the 12 different signs of the zodiac. Oh, now what is this? Sun is going and touching? How is the sun touching the Aries constellation? How is sun touching the Cancer, the Karkatara? How is it doing? Is sun actually moving and going and touching? Right? So what does this zodiac constellation mean? It means, from our perspective, if right now if I am looking at the sun, if I extend this line from earth to sun, if I go beyond, okay, imagine this is the sun and this is the earth as you understand normally moving around the sun, right? So as you see, if you extend the line from the earth to the sun and project it forward here, so there are lots of constellations around us. So this constellation under which the earth and the sun line axis extends, that is the Rashi or the zodiac. So at any given point, right, so to make our life easy, there are many constellations, but our Vedic science, it divides, it takes 12 prominent Rashis. And these 12 prominent Rashis are distributed in the 360 degree space. And so if 360 degrees divided by 12, how much does it come to? 30 degrees. So each Rashi is roughly around 30 degrees. So imagine a big pizza with 12 slices, right? So each slice is one Rashi. So when, and the center of that is roughly where the earth and our sun and the earth can be very close compared to those big Rashis. So put them both in the center of the pizza. And that entire span of the crust, the outer crust of the pizza is the span of that Rashi. And within this Rashi, there are different stars. So within that one sector, there are different stars. How many stars do we have in total? 27 stars. So if you have to divide 27 stars across 12 Rashis, how do you divide 27 with 12? How much does it come to? Well, 2.5 is 28, na? So 2.5 times 12 is 12 to 24 plus 6, right? So that's 30, sorry, right? So how is this? So there are 27 stars, and that extra space is by this 28th special star, which is our Abhijita Nakshatra, which is not usually calculated in our Vedic Jyotisha, but we are all under influence of 27 stars. So these 27 stars are split. So each of those 27 stars are categorized in these different Rashis. And now, because it's a very difficult 27, how do you divide them into 12, all this blah, blah, blah. So what they have done is, each star is given 4 padas. So 27 into 4 is how much? 108. Da, 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 da. The magical number comes. So these 108 padas are distributed across these 12 Rashis. Right? So it's not necessarily equal distribution. I mean, it's not always the 2.5 little stars come in every Rashi, but it's approximate like that. So that is what is described in the second part, where it said that how there are different nakshatras also are mapped to these things. And then, and according to lunar calculations, 2 fortnights, one of the waxing moon, one of the waning moon, is 1 month. And that period is 1 day for the meridians of Pitraloka. According to stellar calculations, a month equals 2 1/4 constellations. So this is what I was trying to talk about. 2 1/4. Right? So 2 full nakshatras and 1 pada of a third nakshatra is counted under 1 full month. Right? Out of the 12 months, each Rashi is mapped that way. And when the sun travels for 2 months, a season passes, and therefore the seasonal changes take place like that. Right? Then, thus the movement of the sun it takes to rotate in the outer space is called one ayana. So this also we understand. So this is one nice exercise you can actually practically do every day. Every day during Guru Puja, you take a photo of the sun. Because every day you can see, if you're standing here, every day you can see sun there, right? So you take picture of the sun and put it in time lapse. And you will notice the sun is moving. That exact at the same time, if you see the sun movement, it seems like the sun is ascending for 6 months of the year, and again it descending back in other 6 months of the year. So that ascending part is called Uttarayana, and there's a Dakshinayana, the phase of the movement of the sun. So again, from our perspective, it seems like the sun is moving, and this the time when this is how we define the equinox and the solstice. If you heard what that is, right? Like, why International Yoga Day is celebrated on June 21st? What is equinox? The longest day of the year happens that time. So as the sun, the Uttarayana Kala, as it increases, right? So that is when the days are becoming longer, 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 longer. And again, day becomes smaller, 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 smaller. Until the winter equinox comes where it is, no, winter equinox, that's around December 22nd or something, when you have the longest night. If any of you are planning to take long rest, wait till December 22nd. That will be your longest night you can get in the year, right? But in between, there will be a point where they are equal. Those are the solstices. So you have the summer solstice and winter solstice. Our Sankranti, the summer solstice, and there's also winter solstice. So like that, September 21st, that is summer solstice. The next one, winter solstice is September 22nd, 23rd, 24th, somewhere around that time. Anyway, so these are the different ayanas, the Uttarayana and Dakshinayana phases that come, right? Then comes something very interesting, which took me a lot of time to figure out. So it said, now Prabhupada gives a very interesting purport. The sun has three speeds. Based on these ayana movements, there are these three speeds, slow, fast and moderate. And he takes that much time to travel, and therefore learned scholars give this five names: Samvatsara, Parivatsara, Idavatsara, Anuvatsara and Vatsara. Now Prabhupada doesn't explain what these Vatsaras are. So, and Prabhupada also gives a very interesting purport here. Let's decode this. According to the solar astronomical calculations, each year extends 6 days beyond the calendar year. So what did you understand? Each year extends 6 days beyond the calendar year means how many days are in a year? 366, if you say leap year, right? The longest year, 366. So each year extends 6 days beyond calendar year. So which year is Prabhupada talking about? Lunar. The very next line Prabhupada says, according to lunar calculations, each year is 6 days shorter. Actually, lunar year is 355 days. The calendar year that we follow is 366 days. So what is this 360 days year? Did you ever hear? Average? Yes. This is not construction department, Prabhu. Right? So, do you know anything that is doing 360 years? 360 is a good number though. What does 360 remind you of? Degrees, circle. So, this is what is called as the year of the calendar of Jupiter. Guru takes 5 years. If you see the rotation of Guru, it is around 5 years around the sun. And Guru's each rotation is perfect. Like you get as multiples of 360. So, for mathematical calculations, 360 degrees is a very important number for us. It's easy to put everything according to the 360 degree framework. So, for all of these, the calendar which is taken is Guru's calendar, not sun, moon or earth. It is called as the Jovian calendar or something. You can look it up. Jovial calendar, Jovian calendar is a name for that. Basically, what it means is that it's roughly 2 years one year of Jupiter is roughly equal to around 2 years of on Earth. So roughly that 5 years is around 360 degrees. So these 5 years that Prabhupada talks about, Samvatsara, Parivatsara, Idavatsara, Anuvatsara and Vatsara, are these 5 years of the time that Jupiter takes to finish its orbit. And therefore, what Prabhupada is saying that each year extends 6 years beyond the calendar year is one, the Earth years that we calculate are 366, is 6 days beyond the 360, and the lunar is around 355, that's around 6 days shorter. And because of the movements of sun and moon, there's a difference of 12 days between the solar and the lunar years. And that difference is covered up. How is it covered up? So 12 into 3 is 36. So every 3 years we have an adhik mass. But Prabhupada here also writes that every 6 years, therefore, we add 2 months. So, as these 5 years, Samvatsara, Parivatsara, all this pass by, 2 extra months are added within each 5 years. This makes the 6 Samvatsara or like that. So, this calculations are with respect to the Jupiter's orbit, the Guru's orbit, like that. So, let's finally come to the whole point, why all this, right? We discussed the what and the how, why all this. So understand that Parikshit is about to die. Now imagine a situation where you have to go from GEV to Chowpatty. And you have been provided a car also to go. You don't even have to take a local, nothing, no train, bus, lorry, all we used to do earlier, nothing like that. You have a proper AC car. All you have to do is sit there, chant Hare Krishna, chant your rounds, and you will go to Chowpatty. But the problem is, nobody ever told you how Mumbai looks like. Nobody ever told you how PVR looks like, how IMAX looks like, how Wankhede Stadium looks like, how the traffic in Mumbai looks like. Imagine a person who never saw a city, right? Always born in GEV, never left GEV, grew up in GEV, right? And now they have to go to Chowpatty Temple. Huh? We have some local. Yeah, actually there are some people like that. Yeah, who never left the Galtare village. Now their destination is what? Chowpatty Temple. So their consciousness should be where? On Radha Gopinath. But when they are traveling, see, everybody has to travel to the same route. Right? So, even if a devotee has to travel to the same route, there's a very good chance, if they don't know what is happening, what is all this, oh, there are traffic signals, oh, there are traffic jams, oh, there are big, big buildings, oh, there are big skyscrapers, there are big, oh, there are big malls. Suddenly, you will get distracted. So, better to know what comes on the way and be prepared and not get enamored by this external energy of the Lord. Likewise, the soul at the time of death is going to witness all of this. We discussed the Antakala, Krishna very nicely describes in the 8th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Right? He talks about the same. At the time of death, the soul's journey has to take one of these paths. At that point, if you are not prepared, if you don't know the map beforehand, you may very get easily lost in the small little amazing things in Krishna's creation. So that's why when Bhagavatam is talking about everything, it is preparing a person to know everything that there is about Krishna. But at the same time, providing the right understanding to see Krishna in everything. Therefore, even if you see a mall, at that time, the devotee while chanting, oh wow, Gopinath is so powerful, he created this mall. Oh, Gopinath is so powerful, he created this traffic jam. Oh, Gopinath is so powerful, he created this big ceiling, right? It is only by energy of Gopinath this ceiling is standing on this ferocious water, right? So when the soul is departing, it is going to witness all of this, right? So we have to understand these things, not because it is there in Bhagavatam, but because it is our map, our journey home, our journey back home, back to Godhead. These are the things that we will encounter. Right? The soul is not going to just wake up in coma and suddenly, right? There is and the soul is always cognizant and always aware. The consciousness of the soul never goes into some kind of a suspended hibernation. So these things are always there. So it's important that we know these things so we don't get allured by the external energy of Krishna. And even if you witness it, understand that ultimately it is the Surya Narayan. His energy is running the whole show. So even when you're looking at all the fireworks in the sky, all these stars and planets in the sky, just understand their light. This is all ultimately Krishna's effulgence coming. So if the effulgence is so beautiful, how much should the effulgent be? Right? So with that consciousness, you can die peacefully without making any stopover or otherwise, the moment you say, oh, Dhrutara is so good, tuck, you are stuck there. Of course, good to be in Dhrutara than any other planet. But imagine you are you see some Kumbha Rashi and you get stuck there in the Rashis, right? Then I have to come back and take birth here. Because once you finish your credits, you have to fall back again. So this is a very powerful and very important preparation. Right? Therefore, nothing given in Bhagavatam is superfluous information. It is preparing one for their final journey. And Parikshit Maharaj is therefore curious to know, I should not get suddenly distracted. Why the sun is moving clockwise or counterclockwise when I'm going back? Clarify now itself, so later I should not get bewildered. So he's getting things clarified. So this is a very serious inquiry that he's made. Thank you very much. There are a few thoughts which I wanted to share. Sorry for overshooting my time. Any one quick question or comment if anybody has, we can take it up. Otherwise we can. Yes. Prabhuji has a correction. Please give it to him.
Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. I mean, especially the last part was very one which is relevant. But what you spoke before was, I was just appreciating that you speak with so much conviction. I was not understanding what you're speaking about the Rashi and the constellations. So my one question is about the sun. What we have studied in the school is stationary. And now we have made so much advancement in, you know, whatever, you know, space, technology and this. And we also know that material knowledge never remains same. It keeps changing. But after so many years, still the children are taught the same thing, that the sun is stationary. Is an expert astronomer going to confide and say that no, the sun is also moving? Have they found out anything like that?
So Prabhu, again, whether the sun is moving or not moving, we need, why are we creating a model in the first place? For our analysis, right? If your analysis is limited to within the solar system, then having a stationary sun model will serve your purpose, and for all your day-to-day calculations and all, it goes on. But if you are thinking of going beyond, if your analysis is beyond solar systems, for example, if they are launching some intergalactic travel, space travels, etc., right? It's just like asking a question, well, Newtonian physics was already discarded when relativity and, you know, special theory of relativity, all this came, Einsteinian physics came. And Einsteinian physics also is now moving out because of quantum physics, which is coming up. But it depends on at which level do you want to operate, right? If I want to operate at gross level, I need a hammer. If I'm doing surgery, I need scalpel. And if I'm doing even more, I may need laser or some ultrasonic or something. So it depends on at which level the analysis is being made. Therefore, none of these models are incorrect. To reject the heliocentric model or sun stationary model is also rejecting Krishna. Because this is part of Krishna's creation. You can look at the creation from a sun-centric model also. Just like how modern scientists have very immaturely rejected the geocentric model, the model of the Pancha Mahabhutas, etc., is very archaic. That is kind of blind faith. Even for us to reject the sun-centric model is also blind faith, right? Because just like, because in medical profession, the body can also be analyzed through Kaphavata Pitta. It can also be analyzed in terms of the different systems that allopathy talks about, right? For gross level, you know, analysis, allopathy works. It gives answers. But when you talk about the subtle, especially the vital energy aspect, Ayurveda has no understanding of vital energy. So that book I shared with you, Quantum Doctor, right? It gives a very nice analysis of this, that it's not that I reject a system completely. It depends on, I use the right tool for the right level of analysis. If I'm talking about subtle level reality, if I want to understand, I use the subtle tools. So therefore, I will say, it is not wrong to teach stationary sun model, but it is wrong to reject the stationary earth model. Teach both. That would be my reply to somebody who will ask what to teach. You need to teach both. Therefore, maybe if we have that facility to our kids, we should teach them the Jyotish Shastra, the basics, which talks about the geocentric model, and teach them modern science, which talks about a heliocentric model. And both are different models which will work for different levels of analysis. Like that. Okay. Jai Granthashimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai Anantakoti Vaishnavinda Ki Jai.